what was tonight like? What has the last couple of days been like? I mean, you were in that room next to us, I guess, you know, the state witnesses were in one room, you guys were in the other room. Were you there all the evening, last evening and tonight?
Yes, we was there from 6:15 tonight. And last night we was, I can't remember from day to day, from hour to hour, it's been such a roller coaster. It's been, your nerves has been on the edge, so like the skin want to fall off your skin, off your bones, it's just been shaky. What was the night before? I just don't remember the night before.
So you guys still live in Kansas City? You just drove in from Kansas City?
We driven up here on Sunday afternoon.
Sunday afternoon.
And we've been here ever since.
Okay, staying here at the hotel?
Staying here, yes.
Okay. What, did you get to talk to your son after it was announced at the stay?
Not tonight, we didn't, no.
When was the last time you got to see your son?
We had a visit with him earlier today. I went up there about...
We went up there about...
About 1 o'clock.
Okay.
And I went up early this morning about 10 because he wanted to sleep a little late. I wanted to go at 8:30, but he was a little tired, so I went at 10. Mm-hmm. Me and his sister, Donna.
What was it like tonight? I mean, I've been there last night. I mean, what was it like for you? I mean, emotionally, what was it like?
Well, it's waiting, and the waiting is like they had set a time for 5 o'clock.
Right.
So we sit through this wait, and then they tell us we can leave, and then they come back and say that it's going to be 7 o'clock. And we done talked to him on the phone. We had been to visit with him, you know, like saying your goodbyes, because we don't know when what is just up, and like she said, a roller coaster.
Mm-hmm.
And then we come back again, and they tell us to be back at 6:45 because it might be 7 o'clock.
He had a visit at 4 o'clock. Peggy was visiting with him. And
who was visiting?
Peggy.
Okay.
Peggy Broom.
Friend of the family.
Okay.
And she rushed back up here because Mr. Parkett told her, "Where's the family? We need the family right away." And we was in here having Bible study, and we had to rush up out of here and rush to the prison because they were saying they were going to do this at 5 o'clock. And so we rushed up there, and once we got there, we were just waiting to hear something, and then they all came and told us that it was not going to happen at 5 o'clock, but it was going to happen at, for us to be back at 6:45, because it was going to happen at
7 o'clock.
At 8 o'clock, at first, 8 o'clock.
Right.
Uh-huh. And, you know, here we is back and forth. So then they called us and told us, Micah called and said, we need to be back up there, because they said it's going to be at 7 o'clock. And then somebody from the superintendent office called and say, we need to be back up there at 6:15 because it's going to happen at 7 o'clock. So, you know, all the misinformation and all the emotions going, you're going through all these changes and not knowing and almost having a panic attack because you're not knowing, you know, the unknown. And then we go, you know, once they get us all in and set us in that room, you just looking at the time, nobody coming in saying nothing. You're just nervous, like you're just, you know, on the edge. And it's 7:05 and still nobody saying nothing. And we asking questions to the ones that was in there with us.
Mm-hmm. And they don't know.
They don't know anything. They didn't know anything.
They're cordoned off to
them. We didn't know anything either.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wow. And then after 7 o'clock, nothing. We just still sitting there, you know, you like,
Was the room silent?
We was quiet. We was just totally
it was
quiet.
A very, very quiet room, and it's no windows or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And after we had been
but
there,
you guys weren't talking.
No,
it
was
no. Just
kind of
a just
waiting,
I guess.
Among each other, to yourself, you know, just waiting.
You're alone with your thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I noticed about half an hour, 45 minutes or so before they finally told us we could go.
Mm-hmm.
I could hear laughter coming out of your side of that.
Yes. We were rejoicing.
Sure.
We were rejoicing, thanking God.
Well, actually, I think what he's speaking of before that, we just kind of just started making conversation because it was a very small room and we were just almost on top of each other. and you just about could hear each other breathe. So we started talking, and we started talking about basically common things, and by me being in the clergy, being the pastor, I started talking to another young man that was in the room who was also clergy. Mm-hmm. And we found out, even though black, white, we had a lot of things in common, we ended up laughing, you know, and talking with each other. And they warmed up to us, and we warmed up to them.
Now, who are these people?
These were the people, we don't know, they were the ones that was assisting us tonight. Mm-hmm. I don't know who they were, but that was basically...
Corrections Department employees?
Right. They were just assisting us tonight. And it just kind of, I think that's what the laughter you heard then. Because actually when they came in and told us we could go, it was more of praise than than laughter.
Right, was there applause at some point?
I heard some applause.
Well, I may have been.
I think I did.
We don't really know exactly what we did.
So I was so happy, and we were praising God and said, thank you, Jesus. And
I wish you would write this, though. I mean, or if you... The in terms of who we contribute this victory to, mm-hmm. A lot of people all over this country, friends of mine were praying, mm-hmm. Our church was praying, and then, of course, God, but then the tenacity of John Simon, the lawyer, and perhaps people that's on his team who work just mm-hmm. untiringly, just a passion for what he's doing. I mean, we just feel victorious. We feel like thus far justice has really been served in this particular case.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. This roller coaster is, with this Taylor family, but I can imagine that the Harris family is still going through. Wounds have been opened up, and they are going through this roller coaster also, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. And I know, as a mother has been, that I have lost a brother to crime. It's a roller coaster, and it's hard, you know, and we continuously on a daily basis, my whole family, we praise for the Harrison.
For the Harrison family.
You've been
all the time,
yes,
all the time.
Mm-hmm. Have you, you said that you personally lost a brother to crime?
Yes, sir.
How many years ago was that?
He was killed in 83.
Wow. Yeah. Have you guys had any contact with the Harris person family?
No, we haven't.
Have you felt moved to do that at all?
We have, yeah.
Several times. I were at the beginning of this whole trial or whatever, our lawyers advised us not to speak to him. That was so many times. I would have loved to have said something or spoke to them personally, but we was advised by some attorneys, which we found out they had no experience or whatever.
And not John Simon.
No, not John Simon.
Previous attorney. They just advised that you not
yes,
be in
we
any contact
would
with
not
them.
Have contact with them. My heart reaches out for them all the time, and I would have loved to have told them how we really felt about what had happened. That we was, like I said, we were advised against them.
How's he feeling right now? I mean, I know you haven't, how was he feeling with this up to the last time you could speak to him?
We spoke to him. He said he just grained.
He's
grained. He's just tired.
Drained. And,
totally.
You know,
oh, right. Uh-huh.
When you go to visit and you're saying the last time maybe you would see your son and the last time you see your parents, I can't imagine even myself what was on his mind, because he was the one that's going to be the one that executed. But he was standing strong. He has been saved. I know that from the bottom of my heart. I have no shadow of a doubt that he is saved. And he was really, really concerned about his mom, myself, and his sisters, because he said God has him and he's going to be all right. He really, really over and over told us that I want you all to be all right, because he said he's behind these walls, but he's not back there by himself. He said God is with him, and he will see us again. He said, he told me the last time I had spoke to him on the phone, which I thought would be the last time, he said, Daddy, I'll always be looking down over you and Mom. I'm going to be all right. And when you pray, he said, I will be hearing your prayer. And
also, he's not drained in terms of fear. Mm-hmm. It was drained in terms of the emotions, waiting and up and down. I didn't want it to sound like that he was...
No, I understand.
The times I spoke with him, just very upbeat, very positive, willing to accept whatever fate it was. But I can imagine when I talked to him, the last time I talked to him on the phone before we rushed to the prison, he said to me that it's getting to me, Pastor, in terms of his human side, mm-hmm. because of getting the news 1 minute, this, and then another hour, you know,
back and forth.
So when we speak of drain, of course, we mean in terms of just that emotional side,
sure.
the human body. Yeah.
Yeah. What was Michael like growing up? I mean, did he have a happy childhood? Mm. Did a happy normal childhood? And if so, what went wrong? What was the detour all about?
Well, he was always a happy kid. He's very playful, liked to tease, and loved to grow.
Loved what?
To grow.
To grow.
Mm-hmm. Cartoon characters or whatever. Mm. Roses, pictures of cars, what, you know, things like that. And as a child, you know, we all been in church all our life. They was raised up in church. And he sung in the choir, was an usher. Wow. And he was a junior deacon. My husband's a deacon, he was a junior deacon. And, you know, we participated in Sunday school, Bible study, BTU was back in them days.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Which church was this?
We were members of Zion Grove Missionary Baptist Church for 30 some years.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. For about 36 years we were members there.
Okay.
And now we are members of the Oak Grove Missionary Baptist Church mm-hmm. under Reverend Kim Gladden.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And Zion Grove was under Reverend A.L. Johnson Sr.
The late A.L. Johnson Sr.
And that's in Kansas City? Yes. Proper or outside Kansas City?
Kansas City.
Okay. What, it sounds like he had a great childhood and a strong family. Mm-hmm. What happened?
Awesome.
I would hate to say, you know, you get mixed with the wrong people or whatever, but if it were the young man, which is co-defender, mm-hmm. They got hooked up some kind of way and got off on drugs. And mm-hmm. when this incident happened, he said they had been spoken, I don't know what I may name, that he had been doing, but it was a band they had been in on that weekend.
I mean, like any family, we had our issues, but mm-hmm. you know, we're a strong family. Mm-hmm. This was totally out of character for Michael. Something that, of course, you never would imagine would happen in your family. Mm-hmm. And we were terribly shocked. Because he was not like this. He was not a violent child, not a violent man. And he just made a wrong turn that day. And he has apologized and asked for forgiveness since we started going through this. Mm-hmm. So his change, his getting saved, his asking for forgiveness is something that didn't happen yesterday or a year ago. Because mm-hmm. he was raised properly, mm-hmm. and he has a conscience, and he is a good person. Mm-hmm. He made a really, really bad turn. And he has asked forgiveness from his family, from the Harrison family, and from our Lord. Mm-hmm. And we've been moving forward since.
And the day, of this crime, late on that evening, he came home to, and he was just crying. I mean, he was just, tears just running out of his eyes like water. His nose just, you know, gripping like crazy. Mm-hmm. He was hysterical, and he was just, I don't know, he was panicking. It was just like, and I kept asking Michael, what's wrong, what's wrong, what's wrong? When he was little, at about five, he found, there was a young lady that came missing on our block, and he found an abandoned house where they used to play at, found the body of a dead, of this young girl in there. And he started having nightmares, just nightmares after nightmares behind us, finding that her body. Wow. And because she had been missing for weeks and she was just all blowed up. You know. And he had...
This is when he was a little boy?
Yeah, he was about five.
About 6 years old.
And he had such horrible nightmare. We just take him to Cherry Mercer Hospital forever, and they couldn't... They didn't see what we see, because when he woke up out of those nightmares, he'd just be in a frozen state, and you could not snap him out. It's just like something had him cramps. You know, you couldn't get him out of him until whatever it was let him go. And I thought that day he was having a nightmare. You know, I thought maybe what was going on. I couldn't. He hadn't had one in a few in a couple of years, but that day I just knew it was a nightmare he was having. And he was just scared, he was shaking, he was crying and snorting, just panicking. And he wouldn't tell me what was wrong. He kept saying, "Mama, only God knows, only God knows, only God knows." And I called his dad at work, and I was screaming, hollering, crying, because I didn't know what was going on. Trying to get him to stay there, but when he was in that frozen state, you couldn't get no sense into him. And he left. You know, I couldn't even hold him there. And I wanted George to come home to help me with him so we can take him to the hospital, but he didn't. He left.
He left the house.
Mm-hmm.
Was he gone for a long time?
Yeah. Next time we, kind of thing, next time we,
It seemed for about a week or so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow.
And at that time, my mother was real bad, sickly, and she was in Louisiana, so I had to leave town. Mm-hmm. And I had my husband and them all, trying to see what's going on with Michael, because my mother had went in a coma, and they had asked us to rush home. And this
and I cannot agree on that, because he came to stay with me for about 2 weeks. And the 2 weeks he stayed with me, he cried, you know, he wouldn't come out the bedroom. He wouldn't take a bath, he wouldn't eat, you know, and I didn't know what was wrong, and I was getting frustrated, you know. After this must have happened, I didn't know what was going on. Right. I couldn't get anything out of him. And my brother was the type of brother that always kept himself, you know, nicely dressed, clean. And this point in time, I couldn't get him to do nothing. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know, you got the room smelling, you won't eat, you're just crying, you're crying. And he was getting me upset, you know, because I didn't know what was going on with him. So I was telling my mom I couldn't handle it anymore. So I just, they said, I know he was back, he turned himself in, he was back in. My mom got him to turn himself in, he was back in Cameron. And that's when I heard about this case. Mm-hmm. I was the person that he called. My mom was out of town. Mm-hmm. And I told him to do what your heart said. You know, I don't know anything about the legal system. I didn't know, you know, tell him what to do. You know, I told him, all I can tell you, just do what your heart said. And that's exactly what I told him. And the next thing I know, you hear this on the news, Michael Taylor, Aaron Harrison, and Roger Nubbin case. And that's it. That's all I can say right now.
That's when he called you from the police department when he was being questioned?
Yes, he called me when he was questioned. Yeah. My mom was out of town, my dad was, I think, at work. And I didn't know what to tell him, so I just told him.
How long of a gap was it before he was apprehended for this case? I mean, how long was it before he was arrested?
He was in Cameron on some probation violation.
Oh, he was already in?
He was already incarcerated.
Okay.
Oh. When they, I don't know, some word got out on the street or whatever, and they went down to Cameron.
Okay.
And talked to him from there.
Yeah. Okay. But ma'am, you were just saying that, you know, he came home and he was really upset, and then he left, and then a short time later he went to your house.
A short time later he came and stayed with me for About 2 weeks.
He just cried the whole 2 weeks.
He wouldn't eat. He wouldn't bath. I had two babies at the time, two little kids. And so, you know, I didn't know what to do with him. You know, I had never seen my little brother like this before. Yeah. So it was just truly, truly, you know, making me upset.
Right.
I was like, tell me what's wrong with you. And he wouldn't do that. He wouldn't tell me what was wrong. He just kept crying. Mm-hmm. And I mean, he cried all day, all night. You know, I get up in the middle of the night, what is wrong with you? You know, yeah, you know, I can't get any sleep because you're constantly crying. What
but he wrong? Couldn't say it. He just couldn't say what was wrong.
He would not tell me what was wrong with him. The first time I heard about this case is when he called from Camp Missouri, and I didn't have a grandmother, no way to get in touch with my mama. Dad was at work, and all I could tell him is just do what your heart say do. Mm-hmm. And that's when it hit the news.
Where do you guys go from here? I mean, it's another waiting game, I guess. It's a different kind of phase now. I mean, you're just stay and...
Well, as a family, we simply wait. We wait and we support Michael. We are his family, we're his rock, and it's us, and we have our faith, we have our God. Mm-hmm. So we wait.
What's the best thing you can hope for?
Well, his life. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's most important. We realize that if he could have his life spared, life without the possibility of parole, that would be some answers to our prayer. And that way it hurts so bad to, like we were saying, to say goodbye. If we could go and see him and talk to him,
that's the best we could hope for. Mm-hmm. So he would get a permanent stay, like the off road.
Right. Yeah.
Can I ask you just one last question? Obviously, faith has been very important to you.
Yes.
Throughout all of this.
Yes.
Has your faith been deepened? Are you closer together as a faith family than you were before? Talk to me a little bit about how important the church has been, or how important the faith has been to your family throughout these last 17 years or so.
It's like a tree. It's like a tree. It's like a tree going through a storm. At this point in our faith, it's been tested, but our roots have just gone deeper,
right,
and the branches have gone higher,
right,
and wider. So our faith has always been prevalent in our lives. However, this is a time where it's tested,
mm-hmm,
and so I mean, we've been a close family, and we've always been a family of faith. This is just has been one of the biggest tests that we've faced.
Yep. Okay, guys. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
When I've gone the last mile of the way. Is that what he requested?
It was not what he requested, but I thought it would be appropriate at that particular time based on the information, the sure information that we thought we had. And it was just, the message is when I've gone the last mile of the way, I shall rest at the close of the day. And I was just trying to give him comfort of not only through scripture, but of course through the word of God. When I've gone the last mile of the way.
He's flattering. He said, that's right. That's